This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Tuesday, October 22nd. This morning, the president tweeted, quote, "All Republicans must remember what they are witnessing here, a lynching." That, of course, is a powerful word with a horrifying history in this country. During my live show, a listener named Willie called in with some thoughts about that.
No one has a rope around his neck. No one has cut his stomach open. Everything that he has done, he has brought it on himself. We did nothing. We did nothing to be lynched.
We'll hear more from Willie on that later on. But first, sorry, Mr. President, the Emoluments Clause is real, not fake. And yes, you have heard of your own ambassadors. Here's how much it seems to me the president is flailing right now, reaching for a way to kind of deny what's going on in front of his nose. Trump's current ambassador to the EU, Gordon Sondland, testified in the impeachment inquiry on Thursday. Trump's current Ukraine envoy, William Taylor, is testifying today. But Trump's comment yesterday?
I don't know most of these people. If I do, I met them quickly or I know them very little. But ambassadors and some others, I don't even know. Most of them, I never even heard of their names.
Well, not exactly. Maybe by next week, he will never have heard of Rudy Giuliani. With us for this, Associated Press, White House correspondent Jonathan Lemire. Hi, Jonathan. Thanks for coming on today.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
Jonathan, what's this about?
Well, certainly the president has not shown any reluctance to disassociate himself from people he suddenly has no use for or he feels like could damage him. I think that's what he's doing here. It is a typical tactic he has used to try to create some space, even when that is unrealistic. But to your larger point, this is a White House and a president in particular, according to all of our reporting, that is still struck by just the sheer speed of what's happening here with this impeachment inquiry. This wasn't the Mueller probe, which went over 2 years. And certainly some prosecutors think that the special counsel conducted a quick investigation, considering how broad and deep it was. But certainly to the general public, in terms of a political matter, it felt like it went on for a long time. It was hard to follow. There's a lot of confusing Russian names. The charges that came down, for instance, to Paul Manafort, who people knew as the president's campaign chairman, but those charges weren't about his involvement with President Trump. This one is faster. It's easier to understand. And with the Democrats in control of Congress, it's a daily stream of individuals who are providing testimony that at least portions of could be very damaging to the president.
So he never heard of his own ambassadors, and apparently he never heard of the Emoluments Clause of the United States Constitution either. This is from yesterday, too.
I don't think you people with this phony Emoluments Clause, and by the way, I would say that it's cost me anywhere from $2 to $5 billion to be president. And that's okay between what I lose and what I could have made.
Now, last I checked, Jonathan, the Emoluments Clause is real. And in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 9, Clause 8, and folks, if you've never heard it said out loud, here it is. No title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, and no person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of the Congress, accept of any present emolument, office, or title of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state, unquote. So, Jonathan, why did he call the Emoluments Clause phony?
So the Associated Press does a series of fact-check stories regarding things the president says. There's not even any need to do one here. It is in the Constitution, as you just read. But again, this is another tactic. This shows you how the president is sort of struggling here, where there's something he doesn't like, he uses the term fake news or didn't happen. Like that, he uses the term fake news not to say that something is not true, but he uses the fake news when it's a story he just simply doesn't like or it's bad for him. And it's a similar move here. Emoluments is a long word. It's a word that most Americans do not know. I'm sure more have learned in the last couple of years since Donald Trump took office. But if he's able to sort of deride it or cast doubt upon it, he can also take with some confidence that there will be people who back him up. You know, perhaps people in the conservative media or some figures on the right who will defend him. And they might not, when pressed, suggest the Emoluments Clause does not exist, but they'll suggest, well, this is a different reading of it, that things are different now. The founders couldn't have understood this when they wrote this out more than almost 250 years ago, but they wouldn't understand the idea of a businessman president in the year 2019. So
inviting foreign heads of state to stay at his hotel.
Right.
in Florida as he was going to do with the G7 and now has backed away from.
That's right. And it's a rare reversal, mind you, where he decided that the hotel and the golf course in Doral, Florida, which is just outside of Miami, he picked that to be the site of the G7 next summer, only to walk away from it after pressure, not just from the usual Democrats, but from Republicans. And that was the key here. Over the weekend, a number of Republicans said to him they would not be able to defend him on this, especially in light of the fact of all the other things they have to defend him right now, which would include the impeachment inquiry, of course, but also his decision in Syria. And I think that they felt like this is just simply too much on their plates. They pushed back, and the president did change his mind.
And let's keep fact-checking. His claim in that clip that being president has cost him $2 to $5 billion. I saw a Washington Post fact-check that his total worth is estimated at $3 billion, so it would be hard for the presidency to cost him more than he has. Can you add anything to that fact-check?
Well, the president has always exaggerated his self-worth and his wealth. So I think there's no question there. We obviously don't have a complete picture of it because he will not release his tax returns, unlike all of his predecessors in modern times. We do know from records that are available that most Trump Organization properties have suffered since he took office. The exact figures are difficult to put your fingers on, but with the one exception being the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C., which has become the favorite destination of both conservative groups, but also foreign leaders looking to curry favor with the White House.
Here's another fact check. We'll headline this one. Sorry, Mr. Mulvaney, the Justice Department says your claim about Ukraine is fake, not real. And of course, in the acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney's news conference on Thursday, already won for the record books, he confessed to a quid pro quo for U.S. military aid to Ukraine. Everybody knows that. But also, he justified the quid pro quo by citing a Justice Department inquiry into the 2016 election. Listen.
There's an ongoing investigation by our Department of Justice into the 2016 election. I can't remember the person's name. Durham, okay? That's an ongoing investigation, right? So you're saying that President of the United States, the chief law enforcement person, cannot ask somebody to cooperate with an ongoing public investigation into wrongdoing? That's just bizarre to me that you would think that you can't do that.
Mick Mulvaney from that same news conference. But now the Justice Department has issued a statement. And remember, this is no hostile army, folks. This is William Barr's Justice Department. And the statement says, quote, if the White House was withholding aid in regards to the cooperation of any investigation at the Department of Justice, that is news to us. Unquote. So, Jonathan Lemire, can you explain what Mulvaney was referring to in the first place and what the Justice Department apparently wanted no part of?
So this has obviously been the major story in the White House the last few days, is the aftermath of the acting chief of staff's news conference on Thursday. He was put up, he consulted with the president. He was asked to go out there to make the G7 announcement. This is when they said they were going to have it at Doral. The president was en route to Texas for a rally that night. The vice president and secretary of state were in Turkey to try to broker the ceasefire or pause in that fighting, which does not seem to have been particularly successful. And they knew that the president himself couldn't make the announcement on the G7. They felt like that would, they were going to get enough criticism as it were. They wanted someone else to be the face of that. Mulvaney took questions, was pressed on the Ukraine. He had been briefed as to what to say and went off message here and really surprised a lot of people around the president. And you just read the Department of Justice pushing back. And also we had, for a rare moment, the president's personal attorney, not as famous as Rudy Giuliani, but Jay Sekulow is the other attorney there. And he also said that he was not consulted with what Mulvaney said. They knew that admitting to any sort of quid pro quo was damaging. Now, Mulvaney has tried to clean that up. He put out a statement later that day. He did a round of Sunday talk show interviews. But it is hard to walk away from something you said on live television and the world watched. So therefore, not only is there now speculation about Mulvaney's future in his position, our reporting says that though the president is not happy with him, he's not, at least at the moment, on the verge of losing his job. But that's in part because they simply don't have any replacements lined up. This has been a White House that from day one has struggled to attract and retain qualified government officers.
So there are a few fact checks. Now let me do a reality check for people rooting for impeachment. In a CNN poll just out this morning, support for impeachment is at a record high, but overall judgments about Trump are holding and, if anything, hardening by my reading of this poll. This poll was just taken over the weekend, so it was after Mick Mulvaney admitted the quid pro quo. And here are just two numbers. The straightforward impeachment one is tantalizing. Should Trump be removed from office? 50% said yes. 43% said no. So it's the first time support for removal has significantly outpaced opposition, says CNN about its poll. But here's the other number reflecting a partisan divide as intense as ever. A month ago, when the Trump-Ukraine scandal was just starting to break, 71% of Republicans said Trump was okay. He did not use the presidency improperly. In the new poll, despite everything that's come out since, that number went up by 16 points. So now 87% of Republicans, 87% compared to 71 a month ago, say Trump did not use the president improperly. So what does this mean, if anything at all, Jonathan? Both parts of that. The public as a whole, now 50 to 43 for removal from office, but 87% of Republicans saying Trump did not misuse his office, up 16 points from last month.
Well, there are a few takeaways here. First of all, it does point out that second number with the Republicans, just what a hold he still has on his party. He is still very, very popular among Republicans. He polls consistently in the 80s, sometimes pushing 90%, depending on the poll, which is also why you are seeing very few Republicans in Congress, particularly in the Senate, speak out against him. They're afraid of the backlash from his voters. They're afraid, particularly those who are up for re-election next year, if they were to criticize him or were we to get to a Senate impeachment trial, cast their vote for his removal, that they would be held accountable by Republican voters, and they'd probably be given a conservative primary challenge a candidate will announce the very next day with the president supporting.
So would it be accurate to say the 50% top line number for impeachment compared to just 43 against doesn't matter that much? What really matters is state by state numbers in states with Republican senators, especially ones up for re-election next year, and they don't look like this?
Well, I think the answer has to be answered in two ways. On one hand, in terms of his actual fate as to whether he will be removed from office or not, it's all about the Republicans in the Senate. We certainly assume, and nothing is guaranteed, but we certainly assume the House Democrats will at some point vote to impeach. They're certainly heading that way, and that he would be impeached by the Democrats. But to be removed by the Senate, he'd have to lose, I believe, the support of 20 Republican senators.
Right. That's assuming that all 47 Democrats in the Senate voted for removal. He would need 20 Republicans, or the Democrats would need 20 Republicans, as you say, to go along to get to the constitutionally mandated 67.
And that is obviously a significant number. And there's, even if there are a few Republican senators, Mitt Romney among them, who seem to be at least entertaining that idea, it would be a lot to suggest that enough would do it to actually remove him from office. Now, in terms of just his public polling, though, the president does face an election next year. And I think that is where he perhaps is more vulnerable. His margins were so slim in some of these states that got him elected that if it were to lose enough of them next time around, and if impeachment were to, this whole matter were to sour enough of those voters, that may simply cost him at the polls next year.
Here's a question from a listener who called in and left a voicemail that relates to the Republican timidity on this, even if they believe Trump is unfit.
Hi, my name is Andy. I'm calling from California. As I watch the coverage of the impeachment investigations, I keep hearing that the reason Republican legislators will not defy Trump is because they're afraid the president will go after them with tweets denouncing them. But I wonder if the primary reason is that as soon as he was elected, Trump installed his chief money raiser at the Republican National Committee and thereby controls who receives funds from the committee's war chest. My understanding is that no president has exercised such total control of his party, not even Nixon, and that it seems to me is what lies behind the reluctance of GOP legislators to cross swords with Trump.
Interesting question. What about that theory for why Republicans might be timid about crossing swords with Trump, that he's actually got financial campaign money power over them that hasn't been much reported?
Well, certainly the RNC and the Trump reelection campaign are working hand in hand as they prepare for 2020. So it certainly is conceivable that that would be a play here, that the president could try to divert money away from those who challenge him. But he's also just has his bully pulpit, which is not just the Oval Office, but it is Twitter. It's the rallies. If people were to defy him, he would probably go to their district or their state the very next week and schedule a rally on behalf of a campaign opponent, a primary challenger. So there are Republicans, and therefore, in that way, also impact the fundraising scheme. If a voter in a state sees that the president, who they like, is coming out against their home state senator, why give that home state senator money? If you're a corporation, same issue. So I think that he has a lot of ways here where he could intimidate these Republican senators in order to not come out against him, both publicly now or down the road in a potential vote.
Did the president use the word lynched or lynching this morning with respect to himself?
He did use the word lynching. Now, it is unclear. You know, we don't know what he was thinking, whether he deliberately used that as a means of a distraction. Obviously, lynching should have a very specific meaning in this country. It is what happened to, in particular, African Americans, many slaves, both hundreds of years ago, but also even in more recent times.
You know what? You don't have to do this yourself. Let me take a phone call. Here's Willie calling in. Willie, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello, Brian. And see, this is just why we should all be supporting this station, because it doesn't hold back the truth. This guy, our president, had the audacity to use that word, lynching. He doesn't know anything about that. He's doing any and everything that he can to save his behind. And what I'd like to say is that he's gone a little bit too far. I was born and raised in Selma, Alabama. I know what lynchings are and how they were performed. No one has a rope around his neck. No one has cut his stomach open. Everything that he has done, he has brought it on himself. We did nothing. We did nothing to be lynched. But he's done so much to the people that he's thinking now that we are doing the same thing to him, which is a witch hunt or a lynching. I am sick and tired of Trump. And I am asking everyone, please deny him. He needs to go. We don't sugarcoat anything anymore. This is enough. Black people are not going to stand for this lynching business. And he called you people. It's not you people. We are the people. Stop sugarcoating everything for Trump and get him out of there. And that's what I wanted to say. I am very upset about him using that word this morning, Brian. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Willie. Please call us again. And this, Jonathan, puts together Trump's repeated willingness to be in the face of African Americans with so much provocative language, puts that in the mix with his Ukraine scandal and the impeachment. I don't know if he did that deliberately because he thinks that his base actually supports that and will rally behind him because of that, or if it's something he stumbled into. I don't know if there's a way for you to know.
Right. And first of all, the caller did a much better job of explaining the power of that word than I ever could. It is unclear whether the president, frankly, who is not steeped in history, who is not someone who, he talks about this openly, is that familiar with the American history. It is not perhaps possible he knew exactly the connotations of that word. It's also possible that he did, and he did so to be inflammatory. And whether it was a deliberate attempt to distract or simply just to call upon himself, we know the president likes to portray himself as a martyr. He likes to suggest that he is the victim. It's part of his sort of grievance politics. He feels like his voters, his disaffected supporters who are angry at their lot in life, who are angry at the system or angry at immigrants, whatever it might be, identify with that. So it may be as simply as what he is doing without necessarily making it racially charged. But let's be clear, he is someone who uses racially charged language all the time. Some of the things he has said, like tweets about those four Democratic congresswomen of color, were legitimately racist. And I think that it is certainly at least possible that is happening here again today.
And so to finish up, I wonder if you see this development, his use of the word lynching, as kind of connecting with an article you wrote earlier this month called Trump's Old Ways Colliding with New Realities. What is it that you saw changing?
A few things. The president has had a playbook that he has used from before he even became a politician, back when he was just a celebrity, tabloid star, a businessman here in New York. Certainly, we saw it accelerate when he was a candidate and now president, where he blusters. He tries to change the subject. He pulls sort of dramatic political stunts. He works in mistruths. He uses the media to tries to create distractions, and he uses allies in the media, whether that was the gossip pages when he was a celebrity developer here, or of course the conservative media as a politician in Washington, where he doubles down, he fights back, and he attempts to sort of bully his way out of it. And at least at this point, that hasn't worked. He has not been able to move Speaker Pelosi in particular, but House Democrats off of this impeachment thing. And with this story, the Ukraine story, and being so easily understood, so in moving so quickly, the public in this case, as you evidenced by those poll numbers, seems to be at the very least wanting to see this process play out, and a growing number of them think the president perhaps should be removed from office.
Jonathan Lemire, Associated Press, White House correspondent. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, heard weekdays 10 a.m. to noon at WNYC.org. And if you want to be a caller on the show with an impeachment news question, call anytime and leave your name and where you're calling from. It's 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255. Talk to you tomorrow.